The case study is the bane of journalists' lives. If they want to tell a serious medical story, often they can't do so without some human story to illustrate it and give it emotion for the reader or the viewer or the listener. John Illman, you've been speaking at the European Health Journalism Conference on this very point.
Well, yes, I mean, one of the points I brought up is the way that traditional journalistic ways of doing things can actually act against the interest of the patient. And if you're looking at medical case histories, there is a story that is known in the trade as the triumph over tragedy, or TOT. And a typical triumph over tragedy story might involve a patient who last year had lung cancer, but this year has climbed Everest. Now, if you are a typical lung cancer patient, you are never going to climb Everest in your life. You might even be lucky if you can walk up the hill in order to get to the shops. Just imagine what kind of devastating effect this has on you. In fact, what I did in my talk was to isolate about 9 or 10 different values which are used by journalists in order to put together case histories. And without exception, all of them were in the interest of the media, and none of them were at all patient-centred. Let me give you another example. Case histories are often rejected by the media because the pictures that come along with the case study are not considered good enough. The media wants beautiful people. Unfortunately, not that many people are beautiful. So what that means is that an awful lot of case studies that are actually of immense benefit to the public just never get published. Another important news value that's used in considering case histories is novelty. Now, you know, novelty, obviously, for obvious reasons, is one of the big drivers of news. But when we consider novelty in journalistic terms, we tend to think about extremes. So we think about first, last, biggest, best, fattest, smallest, etc. Now, what this does automatically, it takes you into the extremes. Now, what that means is that the people in the middle who actually represent the majority are left out. So the overall picture that gets presented by the media is sometimes a distorted one.
Why does that matter?
It matters because it's important for people to see a representative picture. But the question you raise is an extremely good one, because to my knowledge, there has never been any research into this particular area. The whole area of media case histories in medical journalism has been neglected to date.
You spoke about patients being abused by the whole media process.
Yes, I think a lot of this abuse, if abuse is indeed the right word, is unwitting. But I think the first thing to recognise that my agenda as a journalist is totally different to the agenda of the patient who is putting him or herself forward as a media case history. In fact, I think it's very, very important for patients to ask themselves, why am I doing this? Why am I subjecting myself to an interview when I'm going to be talking about the most intimate parts of my life to a total stranger who is then going to broadcast them to the world? What's in it for me? A lot of people feel that they can help other people by taking part in these interviews, and that's absolutely fine. But I think people need to have a sort of clear-cut idea as to why they're doing these things. And my feeling is that sometimes people are sort of pushed into this arena, sometimes by self-help groups, sometimes by charities. Charities want to raise their profile. How do they raise their profile? They put forward patient case histories who tell their stories and mention the charity, and the charity then gets income as a result of that. There's nothing wrong with that in theory, but sometimes it just makes me feel a little bit uneasy. And sometimes these patients are not really aware of what they're letting themselves in for.
You're saying that people should be prepared for that?
I think people should be prepared for that. I mean, quite often healthcare professionals undergo media training. I think there's a pretty strong case for patients having the same kind of training so that they know exactly what they're letting themselves in for. And they should work out in advance exactly what they're going to say and not let themselves be pushed any further. Because you know, as a journalist yourself, that we do have an interest in pushing people to make the story that little bit stronger. Now, that is a perfectly legitimate thing to do as a journalist. But as a patient, you may be pushed over an edge towards a very uncomfortable situation.
And once the story is out there, it's out there, and you can't bring it back. And you would not pay people?
I would definitely not pay people to tell stories about how they've been patients. It seems totally reasonable to me to pay expenses. But that is also a bit of an ethical dilemma, isn't it? Because you and I work as journalists, we get paid for it. The patient gives his or her time, and I'm saying they shouldn't be paid for it. Well, who's right and who's wrong? I mean, that's what makes it an ethical dilemma. But I feel uncomfortable about the idea of paying patients.
Is that because they might then feel obliged to deliver value for money?
Exactly that.
And say things that perhaps aren't really quite what they mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And as a journalist, you shouldn't actually want them to do that.
You certainly should not. Because one of the things I always try to tell my students is that the truth is invariably more interesting than the fiction. And yet the temptation sometimes is to pursue the fiction as you see it in journalistic clichés.
We should say that if you've got a good case study, you can really make your story sing, and it does help it to get onto the front pages or certainly page three lead and engage the readers and be read by more people. So it may have some value.
I think also that what is happening is that patients themselves are now revolting against the traditional news values that we have used for so long. And they're doing so because they now have access to the internet. And up until the time of the internet, the media, in effect, had a monopoly. So what that meant was that they could impose whatever values they liked in order to bring the stories in. But a favourite example of mine is a new website called Health Talk Online. And Health Talk Online actually features thousands of different case histories. And these have been selected by researchers at Oxford University because they present a more representative picture. And that's their value. And that was actually the brainchild of a GP called Dr. Anne McPherson, who was also the co-author of a series of books which began with Diary of a Teenage Health Freak. So in terms of health communicators, she was very, very special. Unfortunately, she died last month from pancreatic cancer.
You gave an example from your own career, working for both broadsheet and tabloid newspapers, of a time when a picture didn't run because it might not have been to the reader's liking.
This was a case in The Guardian, and I was working as health editor. And I must say, this was the only time in my experience as health editor on The Guardian when the editor of G2 said, "I'm not having that picture on one of my pages." And it was actually a picture of a woman in a wheelchair. And the word he used was cripple. So that picture was taken out, and in its place was a beautifully drawn abstract drawing, which looked wonderful. And the picture of the woman in the wheelchair was reduced to probably 2 inches high.